We are on page 708. We are in middle of Pasuk Vav. Okay? Fifth line down. Okay, last time we discussed at great length the concept of Shalom, what the true definition of peace is, what peace of mind is, and peace of pieces and everything, what Shalom is and how to get Shalom or whatever. But the Pasuk says, I'll give peace in the land. And the Gemara says, Rashi quotes, you're missing half.
I'm missing a half?
Yeah, your husband.
He's here.
Oh.
I mean, he's not here, but he's coming.
Nasati Shalom Ba'aretz, Rashi said, if Shalom's here, everything's here. And we explained last week why peace is everything. But then the Pasuk says like this, Vishpati Chayro Min Ha'aretz, I will... where did I lose the place? Yeah. I will cause wild beasts to withdraw from the land. And there will not be any swords, will not cross your land. Okay, so again, the first part of the pasuk we went through last week, Venasati Shalom Ba'aretz. What does it mean now? Vishpati Chayro Min Ha'aretz. I will destroy the, I will withdraw the wild beasts from the earth. So Rashi doesn't bring this down, but there's a medrash that says there's an argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon what this means. What does it mean when Hashem says, V'yishpati chayroi, so to speak, destroy the wild beasts from your land? So one opinion is, Rabbi Shimon says, Shelo yazuku, I'm going to make it that they won't hurt you. In other words, the wild beasts will stay, but the bad of the wild beasts will not hurt you. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Tashbisu means I'm going to destroy them completely. Okay? So it's two opinions what this means. Rabbi Shimon says the beasts will stay. They will not be what's called Chayirah. They won't hurt you. And in fact, like the Pasuk says, when Mashiach comes, the little kids are going to be play with the lion, and they're going to stick their hands into the lion's mouth, and nothing will happen to them. It's going to be a world of peace, and all the animals are going to be very peaceful. But Rabbi Yehuda takes it a step further, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Hashem is going to remove them completely from the earth. So it's interesting, because the Rogachover connects this to a different argument between Rabbi Shimon, or really the Chachamim, and Rabbi Yehuda. When it comes to Chametz, the Torah says, Tashbisu Sa'or Mi Batechem. You have to get rid of the Chametz from your house. Torah says it's a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah. Tashbisu Sa'or Mi Batechem. You have to destroy, you have to get rid of the Chametz. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein bir chametz ela sreifa. The only way you can get rid of chametz is by burning it. That's it. There's no other way of getting rid of the chametz. You have to burn it. The chachamim hold, and Rabbi Shimon is one of the chachamim, say no, you could throw it into the ocean, you could throw it up into the air, you know, that it should just disintegrate. You don't have to burn it. You can just, you know, throw it into the sea. Okay, to destroy it. What's the difference, if you think about it, between the two opinions? Why does one say, Tashbisu sa'armi batechem, getting rid of the chametz means you mamish have to burn it? And the other opinion says you don't have to burn it, you can throw it into the sea that it'll disintegrate. When you burn something, the definition is like this. What does the word vihishpati mean? Or tashbisu? Tashbisu means destroy. Does that mean that you destroy the core of it, the essence of it, you destroy? Or does it mean that you get rid of the form of it? Because the truth is, when you throw something into the ocean, it doesn't disappear. It just separates itself. The form of it separates. It disintegrates, so to speak, but the thing is really still there. But the form and the shape of it doesn't exist. So Rabbi Yehuda says, When the Torah says Tashbisu Sa'armi Batechem, you need to get rid of chametz, means you have to get rid of it completely. You have to get rid of it completely. How do you get rid of something completely? You have to burn it. That's how he defines what the Torah says Tashbisu. You need to destroy it. You have to get rid of the essence of it. Chachamim say no. You don't have to destroy the essence of it. As long as you don't have the shape or the form of chametz, it's okay. So you can throw it into the ocean, you can throw it up into the air and let the air remove it and so on. So the Ragachavi says, this is the same argument over here in our pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda says, what does it mean? V'hishbati chayera min ha'aretz. What does it mean I'm going to destroy the evil beasts? Rabbi Yehuda said, by chametz you got to burn it. Hashem says, there's evil. No, stay where you are. There's evil. You have to get rid of it completely. The Chachamim, Rabbi Shimon holds, you don't need to get rid of the essence, you need to get rid of the form of it. So it says like this. Rabbi Yehuda says, what does it mean, Vishbati chayera min ha'aretz? Hashem says, I will get rid of them completely. There will be no remembrance of the lions and the tigers and the dangerous animals. Rabbi Shimon says, what does it mean, Vishbati chayera? I'm not going to destroy the essence of it. I'm going to destroy the form of it. Until now they destroyed, now they're not going to destroy. Okay, there's a lot of, and Rebbe Nesicha connects this to arguments between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in the laws of Shabbos, but Melacha Sheina Tzricha L'Gufa and Miskaven. He connects it to a lot of different arguments between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. But this is the two opinions over here. When the Pasuk is saying, V'ishbati chayera min ha'aretz, does it mean that he will get rid of them? Or they won't get rid of them, but they won't disturb you anymore. They won't bother you anymore. And this is the argument, what the word of V'ishbati chayera, what does it actually mean? Okay, so that's V'ishbati chayera min ha'aretz. Oh, V'cherev le'saver b'artzachem. Another thing it says, that there won't be even a sword going through your land. So Rashi says, what does this mean? Afilu lave derech artzachem. Because if the Pasuk already says that your enemies are not going to disturb you, so what is the Torah adding that you won't get to have a sword in your land? So Rashi explains in the Medrash that even countries that just want to go through your land, they don't want to start up with you. They just want to go through your land to get to another country. There's two other countries are fighting. They're not even interested in starting up with the Jews. Just to pass through the land, even that won't be. Even cherev shel shalom, even a peaceful sword, that they don't even want to start up with the Jews. Hashem says the reward for keeping mitzvahs, you won't even have that. Because sometimes that could also lead to something that, could come to something bad. So Hashem says, even that won't be. Okay, then the Pasuk says like this. Or the daftem eseveichem, you will pursue your enemies, you'll run after your enemies. V'noflu lefneichem lechorev. And they're going to fall before you to a sword. In other words, that, as Arachaim adds, what is this Pasuk adding on the previous Pasuk? It already says v'cherev li'saver b'artzachem. It already says there won't be any swords in your land. What is the Torah adding now? It says the Rechaim HaKadosh says like this, that they'll be secure from their enemies, which means that even people that hate you, okay, they're going to suffer defeat. Not only they won't start up with you, all your enemies are going to get punished by themselves without you even fighting them. These are all the brachas that will happen when a Jew does these things. The Me'am Leyes over here brings down, it really goes on the Pasuk, V'nasati Shalom Ba'aretz. The Me'am Leyes brings down a very interesting story from the Gemara. Rab Meir, going back to the Pasuk, I'll give peace in the land. Rab Meir used to speak Friday night a whole night. is to talk Torah all night, Friday night.
To himself or to people?
No, to people. You'll soon see the story. So there was a woman that used to come to the mayor's class Friday night, and she listened to the end of the speech, which was late. By the time she came home, the candles in the house already finished burning. It was dark in the house. Didn't have electricity. The husband says to her, "Where were you? Where were you? You didn't give me dinner. Where were you?" She said, "I went to the Chochem. I went to the mayor to learn." So he said, the husband said, "I swear," this is to this husband, "I will not let you into the house until you go to that rabbi and spit him in the eye. I swear, don't do this at home. Husbands, don't do this. Not a good idea. I swear," he said, "I'm not going to let you into the house until you spit the mayor in the eye." So the woman, it says, stayed outside for 3 weeks. She didn't have the guts to go to the mayor and spit in his eye, you know, in his face, in his eye. And the husband said, "You're not coming home until you do it." So what happened? She couldn't do anything. So her neighbors said to her, "You know what? We're going to go to the mayor and tell him what the problem is and let him come up. He's a smart man. He'll come up with a resolution to the problem." So they come to the mayor, and it says that the mayor, right away, as soon as he saw them, he knew Baruch HaKadosh what the issue was. So the mayor said to them, "Okay, I have a good idea. Is there anybody that knows how to, in the olden times," don't ask me what this means, "in the olden times when somebody had an eye infection, today you put drops in the eye. In the olden times, they would spit in the eye. And you had to know how to spit into the eye that it should work. This is what they used to do. Lecha shaleinel." So the mayor said to her, "Listen, I have a problem with my eye. I have a problem with my eye. Spit in my eye and you'll cure me."
Is that
romance? Yeah, the mayor understood what they wanted. They didn't even tell him the story. The mayor understood already what the story was, and he tried to solve the situation, and he wanted to get the woman to spit in his eye. But he can't say, "Okay, spit in my eye." She's not going to do it. So before they even started speaking, the mayor says, "You know, is anybody amongst you that know how to spit in the eye to make it feel better?" So the neighbors turned to the woman and said, "Hey, this is a good way out. You can spit into his eye kosher, you know. It won't be a problem." But she just couldn't get herself to do it. So the mayor said to her, the woman said to the mayor, "Excuse me, I don't know how to do this, you know." So the mayor said, "Listen, I want you to spit in my eye 7 times. I want you to spit in my eye 7 times that I should get cured." So finally the lady did it. Okay? Then the mayor said, "Go home to your husband," told the woman, "and tell your husband that you told me to spit once. I spit 7 times in his face. And for sure he's going to give you in, to take you in with, buy you diamonds." Anyway, so the woman went home and the husband let her in. So the student said to the mayor, "Okay, we understand the story, but why did she have to spit 7 times? I mean, it's 7 times embarrassment. I mean, like, what did you need it for?" So the mayor said to them that the kavod of mayor shouldn't be greater than the honor of Hashem. To make peace between husband and wife, Hashem erases his name by the Saita. But the wife that the husband accuses her of committing adultery, it says he erases Hashem's name in the water and she drinks it. So he says, if God can erase his name, I can get spit 7 times. It's not no big deal. No, so he says that this is what the mayor did about going back again last week about Shalom. This is the importance of Shalom. Okay. So then the Torah says like this. The enemies are going to fall before you, even in a way they're going to have embarrassment. I mean, whoever hates you is going to fall apart. And then he says, this pasuk adds it like this. Without them, I say, Vechem, you're going to chase your enemies. V'naflu lefnechem lecharev, they're going to fall before you as with a sword. So Rashi says, what is this pasuk adding? This pasuk adding is, when the enemies come to fight you, they're going to get so mixed up between themselves, they're going to start killing each other. They're going to start killing each other. Okay? Like other psukim in the Chumash says, that the enemies are going to, but in Egypt, with the firstborn, right? The Egyptians started a civil war between themselves, start killing each other. And the pasuk continues, says like this, V'ratfu mikem chamisha mea, you're going to have so much power that five of you will chase 100, and 100 from you will chase 10,000. Now, so the Medrash asks, and Rashi brings this down, the math is a little off. If five chase 100, it says 20 times the amount, so 100 should be 2,000. Right? It should be 2,000. And yet by 100, the Torah says it's going to chase 10,000. That means 5 is going to chase 100, and 100 is going to chase 10,000. Should be 2,000, not 10,000. So what does the pasuk mean? So some mefarshim, interestingly, learned the pasuk like this. Chamisha mea, 5 will chase 100. Umea, when it's 500, in other words, they read the pasuk like this, Daskim Malatesis and Ebbein Obachayan like this. It means that when there's 500, Chamisha mea, then they'll chase 10,000. And as they use the word mea twice, they read it, Chamisha mea, 5 will chase 1,000, right? And then when it's Chamisha mea, when it's 500, then they'll chase 10,000. Because 10,000 is 20 times 500. Okay, so they learned the math percentages are good. 5 people will chase 100, and 500 will chase 10,000. That's the way Rabbeinu Bechaya learns Daskin Malatesis, and that's the way everybody learns the Pasuk. Rashi quotes in the Medrash differently. Rashi says, this is the power of the many. When you have 5 people, they're only going to be able to chase 20 times the amount. When you have 100, 100 is more powerful than 5 versus 100, and their power is going to be so strong that they're even going to be able to chase 10,000. Okay? In other words, it's going to be 100 times the amount. 5 can only chase 20 times the amount. When you have a lot of people, they could chase 100 times the amount. 100 to 10,000. This is the way Rashi learns in the Medrash. And Rashi says, it teaches us, there's a big difference between few that do the Teira or many that do the Teira. In other words, even to take it in a practical sense, according to Halacha, 10 Jews for a minyan is not 10 individuals. 10 people in a minyan is what's called a tzibur. It's a new entity. It's a powerful entity. In other words, it's not like one Jew could do half a kedusha. I mean, a tenth of kedusha. Once you hit 10, you have the many, the power is infinitely greater. There's a famous Gemara in Saita, speaking about the Meraglim, you know, the fruit that they brought back from Eretz Yisrael. It says, it took 8 people to carry one cluster of grapes. And the Gemara says, you can imagine how big and heavy it was. Because the Gemara says like this, a person himself can carry only a third of the weight if somebody else helps him. In other words, if one person can carry 50 pounds and another person can carry 50 pounds, together they can carry 150. They can carry, it's not, if you can carry 50, you can carry 50, it's together you can carry 100, it's not true. When you have 50 and 50, two people, you can carry 150. Why? Because then you're not only dealing with individual strength, you're dealing with this combined strength in addition to the person's own strength. So he says like this, and this is what Rashi is saying. It's a remarkable lesson, by the way. When you have a lot of people doing something together, 100 people, it's not 100 times 1. 5 people, which is not even a minion yet, not even a tzibur, not even a kohol, a community, it's only 5 people, they can chase away 100. 20 times the amount. The Torah says when you work together as a group, a tzibur, which is 10 plus, so then you can accomplish infinitely, infinitely more than you can as individuals. And that's what the Torah is saying over here. It's a remarkable lesson, by the way. In anything in life, when you do it as a group, you can accomplish much, much more than individuals. In Hayyim Yayim, the Rebbe brings down an old Hasidic expression that says the following. When two Jews meet, it's two Yetzer Tevs versus one Yetzer Hara. When two Jews meet, it's two Yetzer Tevs versus one Yetzer Hara. So the question is, 1 minute. We all have Yetzer Haras, so it's two against two. Right? Why do you say it's two against one? It's two Yetzer Tevs against two Yetzer Haras. So one of the explanations is very interesting. And that is like this. My Yetzer Hara, what I desire is not what you want. And what you want is not what they want, and not what he wants, and what she wants. Every person's Yetzer Hara has different problems, different desires. The Yetzer Tov, everybody's Yetzer Tov wants to do one thing, what Hashem wants. Okay? When two Jews meet, both Yetzer Tovs with the common goal gang up against each person's individual Yetzer Hara. Because your Yetzer Hara is not my Yetzer Hara. So first they gang up on my Yetzer Hara, and then they gang up together on your Yetzer Hara. So the truth is, it's two Yetzer Tovs against one Yetzer Hara, because each one tackles individually. But this is the uniqueness of a kohol, of a community, of the power of the many, that the Torah says, when it comes to the enemies, if you keep Torah mitzvahs, then 100 of you are going to not get 5 times the amount, they're going to get 100 times the amount. And this is the power of Jews working together. In fact, there's a famous mashal that they say, 2 mashalim that they give in the Midrashim. You know, the sand by the ocean, right? The sand stops the powerful waves of the ocean. Okay? But if you look at each kernel of sand, it's nothing. It's nothing, mamish nothing. Yet when they gang together, they become so strong that they can hold back the powerful waves of the ocean. So it says, why are the Jews likened kechol hayom? In many psukim, the Jews are likened to the sand of the sea. So it says, one of the explanations of this, the Mefarshim explain, because just like the sand of the sea, when they together, they become united, they can hold back powerful evil forces, so to speak. When Jews gather together, they can hold back all the forces of evil. Another mashal they give, you can have a single straw. Not that you drink from hay. A straw is very easy to break. Take it, you break it very easily. When you have a bundle of straw, it's impossible to break. It's not 100 times harder. It's impossible. This you can break and this you can't break. Why is it? Why is it? Shh. Why is it? Because when you're unity, when you're united and you have achdus and unity, the power is infinitely greater than you have as an individual. And this is what the pasuk is teaching us over here. When a person follows the way of Hashem, they work together in achdus, because in evil, no two people are the same. Everybody's evil is going in different directions. But in Kedusha, when people work together in holiness, so then the Torah says your power is going to be so strong that not only can you do 5 times the amount, you can do 100 times the amount.
Rabbi, yeah. That statement is true for everyone, that when they're together, the power is more. But for Jews, we can say because they have the bracha, is that makes it so much higher.
The bracha is the peace. Remember, we said last week, the last Mishnah of the entire Mishnah is that God didn't find a vessel for bracha, only peace. Right? In Sim Shalom, we say 3 times a day in the Amidah and the Shemoneh Esrei, we say, Barchenu Avinu Kolonu Ke'echad Ba'er Panecha. Simply, if you take the English translation, it means, Barchenu Avinu Kolonu Ke'echad, our Father, meaning Hashem, she bless us all together. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe switches a little bit. And he says, what the tefillah really means is, Barchenu Avinu. When can God bless us? When Kulanu Ke'echad, when we're all one. In other words, when the Jews are all one, Kulanu Ke'echad, when we're all stand together, that, so it says like this, when you have 2 Jews, even 2 Jews, forget 100, you even have 2 Jews, there's the individual powers of them separately, and like we said before, by the weights, you have a third power, which is the joint of them both together. Which is the third power of Hashem. Yeah, so you're right. It's much more powerful. And therefore it's understood the more people you have, the more you have. In fact, there's an opinion in the Gemara in Brachas. We don't rule like that. You know, when you have a mezumen, okay, you say, Nevarich shachalnu mishalei. When you have 10 people, you say, Nevarich elokeinu shachalnu mishalei. Right? For a minion. What opinion the Gemara says, when you have 100, there's another, you add something to that. 1,000, another thing. 10,000, 100,000, 600,000. The halacha is today, 10 and higher, we only do nevarich elokeinu, no matter how many people you have. But the number 100, why does the Torah pick over here the number 100? The number 100 symbolizes completeness. It symbolizes completeness. What does it mean, completeness? There are 10 attributes, right? Chochmah, Binah, and Das, the 10 spheres, right? The 10 attributes of Hashem. Each one is composed of 10. Together, it's 100. And therefore, in Torah, the number of 100 represents completeness. And this explains a Mishnah that we said in last week's Pirkei Avos in Perek Chamishi. The last Mishnah, Perek Chamishi, at the end of it is very strange. The Mishnah says like this. When you're 5 years old, you start learning Chumash. 10 years old, Mishnah. 13, Bar Mitzvah. 18, Chasana. 20, Parnasa. And then it goes on the ages. 30 is Koyach. 40 is Understanding. 50 is Eitzah, right? Then the Mishnah says, Ben Meah. What happened when you become 100? You live 100 years old. The Mishnah says something very scary. Ben Meya ki'ilu meis. It's like you died, as if you were dead. Va'avad ubatu min ha'ilam. And passed away and ceased from the world. I mean, it's a funny thing to tell somebody. The Mishnah says, the 30 is this, 40 is this, 50 is this. Tell a guy, he lived long. 100 years old, what do you tell him? You know, you're like dead. And it's very exciting for a dead, for a 100-year-old person to hear.
Right now, it's not.
Yeah, so a lot of people live to 100 today. What does the Mishnah mean? B'meya kilumes kilumes va'avad obatam in ha'ilam. This is what you tell a guy which is 100 years old. It's weird. So the Mefarshim explain, especially in Chassidus, it says this. That Ben Meya, again, when a person is 100, meaning they reach the completeness of all of the 10 midot, each one composed of 10, right? What do you tell him? Kilumes va'avad ubatol min ha'olam. It doesn't mean that you died and left the world. Olam means concealment, he'elam. Why is world called olam? Olam comes with ha'elam, which means a concealment. what you tell a person that reached the age of 100, meaning he utilized all 100 capabilities of his soul to the fullest, you say you are not any more connected to the concealment. The avat ubatul min ha'olam doesn't mean you're dead and left the world. You left the concealment of godliness, you reach the ultimate state of purity. That's what you tell the person, ben meya. But the same thing over here, when the Torah says the word meya mikem, the Torah is referring in a spiritual sense to the completeness of the number 100, which is a completeness of Kedusha, of 100.
So the people who get to the age of 100 or close to 100, they are more pure, and if they request something, it goes to God.
The fact that they have the bracha of Arichas Yamim, why does the Torah say you have to have respect? Today's generation doesn't believe in this. But the Torah says, "Bipnei seva tokum, vardarta pnei zokim." You have to give respect even to an older person who's an ignorant Torah, you know, he's not a scholar. You still have to respect him, right? Number one, the fact that he had the bracha to live long, that shows that he deserves a certain schus, a certain merit that he has, that Hashem could make him live long. Secondly, it's interesting, the Rebbe once spoke, you know, in the American generations, they knock the old people. As we all know, you know, if you're not young, you're worthless. And the Rebbe spoke such a practical thing. He said, the life experience that older people have is unbelievable. It's invaluable. I mean, you can't even put a price on it. Of the experience that they have. And the problem is that today's kids, today's younger generations, don't want to hear about what the older people lived through and the difficult times and how they survived and all that. They don't want to hear all that. But there's a certain level, especially at the age of 100, you know, by Avram Avinu, the Torah says in Parshas Chayisara, V'Avram Zaken Bo Bayomim. Avram was old, coming in days. So the Zayar asks, old and coming in days is the same thing. Right? What does coming in days means? He was old. So it says already of Avram Zaken. What does it mean, Baba Yomim? Right? So the Zayar says, and it's alluded to in the Gemara and Medrash also, that not only was he old in passport years, but Baba Yomim means each one of his days were used to the fullest. Each Baba Yomim is an additional thing. You could be old and you didn't live, you know, a full life. But Avraham Avinu, every day of his life was utilized to the fullest. So it's not a repetition, it's he's old, coming in days. But the number Meya in Torah, B'chlal, the Mefarshim say, when the Torah uses the word Meya, the Torah is referring to a certain level of completeness in life. And therefore, when a person reaches that level of Meya, it becomes a revolver you die for. They're going to be able to even do 10,000.
Everyone else has a mission trying to get to that. Is that related to that 100? Or that's it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean when you get 100 years, you have to stop. You can keep going. But, yeah. In other words, the spiritual, like it says in the Mefarshim, you can have a Ben Chamish Lemikra, 5 years old learning Chumash, could be a man with a long white beard. And he could still be in the mentality of a 5 year old learning Chumash. You know what I mean? It's not passport years. There's a certain level of completeness. A person could live shorter and still lived a life of 100 years in the 50, 60, 70 years that they lived. You know, it's a state of accomplishment rather than a state of passport years, you know, when you were born.
Isn't it like dangerous? You hurry up and reach that age to
do
that completeness then?
We try to reach completeness, but we could take our time reaching it.
Hard to hurry up 300.
Okay. Upanisi Aleichem, the Pasuk says, I will turn my attention to you. V'efreisi Yeschem, I will make you fruitful. V'ebeisi Yeschem, and I will multiply you. V'akimesi as brisi itchem, and I will establish my covenant with you. Okay? And the Mefashim point out that, as the Sefuna says, it doesn't say itchem, I mean lochem, it means with you, meaning not because of the merit of your forefathers. Sometimes they say v'akimesi as brisi, as Avram, as Yitzchok, as Yaakov. Itchem means it will be your own covenant because of your behavior. Like this we always say because of Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. The Mefashim, the Sefuna says, v'akimesi as brisi itchem means because of your own doings, I'll do this. Now what does it mean, v'fanisi aleichem? Okay? So, in Me'amleis, he brings down a moshul from Teres Kehanim. He says like this, a moshul of a king. He said a king hired workers to work with him. And one worker really worked hard. He really worked harder than all the other workers. So when it came payday, and everybody came to get paid for their work, the king says to this guy that really worked hard, you know what? You stay here. You go off to the side. He took care of everybody. And then he turns to the guy and says, you deserve more. But you, I'm going to deal, so to speak, privately, face to face, because of the work you did. So he says, Hashem is going to do the same thing. The goyim are going to come for their reward in this world. Hashem says, here, take it. This is what you're going to get, because this is what counts for you guys. This is your world. To the Jews, he's going to say, Panisi Aleichem, Hashem says to the Jews, you know what? You stick around here. You're going to get a different type of reward. You're going to get Olam Haba, permanent reward, and all that. It's a much different level of reward. But what does it mean, Panisi Aleichem? It's a very interesting thing. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe says a concept. When a person does a mitzvah, it says, we say, L'shem Yichud, right? There's a Yichud, a oneness, a unity that a Jew has with Hashem. So he gives an analogy in Tanya of a king over a massive, massive country. Yeah? Mamish, a big country, thousands and millions of people. And one day the king calls up this individual, unique person, and he says, you know what? Tonight I'm coming to spend time only with you. That's it. I'm not going to anybody else in the country. You're the only one that I'm going to be with. So he says, you can imagine the simcha of that person. If he loves the king, you can imagine that the king is coming only to him and to nobody else. You can imagine the great simcha that the person has. The Alter Rebbe says, that's exactly what happens when a person does a mitzvah. A person becomes one with Hashem. Like it says, v'fanisi aleichem. Panisi aleichem here in the English translated, I will turn my attention to you. But panisi aleichem comes with panai. Okay, panai aleichem means Hashem says, I'm going to give you my face. You will become one with me, just me and you. Nobody else. Just you and I, to speak correct the grammar, is going to be only you and I. In a way of Hashem's pnimius. What does it mean? You have they give a mashal, the Midrashim give a mashal of this. Sometimes it's, like it says, panim b'panim dibar Hashem. Sometimes it says, face to face, God speaks to you. Sometimes it says, in the klolos, we're going to see, Hashem is going to say, I'm turning my back to you. Yeah? What's the difference? Sometimes you want to do this with your kids. Somebody you like, somebody, you know, that you're good with, you want to face to face, to smile at them, be with them face to face. Sometimes, figuratively speaking, you hate the person, but you got to give it to them. You got to give it to them. You know, you have to pay them, but you really don't want to. So figuratively, you're throwing it over the shoulder. It's like you're not doing it in a way that you really want to do it. You're doing it over the shoulder. That's called, from the level of b'chinas achorayim, so to speak, from the backside. You're giving it to them. They deserve it. You have no choice. You have to give it to them, but you don't really want to give it to them. You give it to them because you have to give it to them. When Jews behave, Hashem says, "Upanisi aleichem," it's going to be face to face. I'm going to see your face, you're going to see my face, we're going to smile at each other, so to speak. There's going to be this open relationship. When the Jews sin, as we'll learn in the Teichacha coming up, then Hashem says, okay, I got no choice, I'm your father, I have to support you, but you know what? You're not going to get it face to face. I'm throwing it over my shoulder. You're going to get it that way. You got it, but it's a completely different way of getting it. So Hashem says over here, in this pasuk, "Fenisi aleichem," I'm going to turn my attention to you, meaning I'm going to give you, turn my face to you. "Ve'ebeisi aschem," I'll be make fruitful. "Ve'ebeisi aschem," I'll make you fruitful. "Ve'ebeisi aschem," I'll increase you. And by the way, this is not only in quantity, but it's in quality also. "Ve'akimeisi esbrisi yitchem," and will reestablish my thing with you, only with you in your own merits. Not because of anything else. And as Rashi says, that this promise will be forever. And then it says like this. V'achaltam, prosecute. V'achaltam yoshen noshon. You're going to eat the old grain and remove the old to make way for the new. This is again a brochen gashmias. You will have so much food that you're going to eat the old food. It's not going to rot. It's going to be fresh in a way that you're going to have to get rid of the old models to bring in the new models. Today in this store, that's a curse. Like when the car dealers have to make a clearance sale that shows business is not good. When business is good, they don't need to make a clearance sale. They automatically get rid of the stuff. But here the Torah says you're going to have so much food and it's going to be in a way of a bracha that even the And the Mefarshim say over here, it also refers to, remember we learned by the sabbatical year, the fruit is going to have to be 3 years. He said, even that old grain that you're eating from the fifth year for the sixth, seventh, and eighth, is going to be so much, you're going to have an abundance, that even the ninth year comes around, you're still going to have leftover, fresh food. You're going to have to move it to get in the new ones. And therefore, he also says, the Yashim Ibn Chodesh Titziyu, and you're going to have to remove the old to make way for the new. And again, the Sifurna says, that means you're going to have so much, you're going to, Titziyu means, you're going to actively export it. You probably make business from it. You're going to export it to other countries because you're going to have such an abundance. One second, he says over here, okay, no, he doesn't. Okay. When Nasati Mishkani Beseichachem, Hashem says, I will put my dwelling place, my sanctuary within you. So Rashi says it means the Beis HaMikdash will be in Yerushalayim. It means Beseichachem also within every single Jew. Not only in the Beis HaMikdash, but Beseichachem, like it said, Beshchanti Beseicham, within every single Jew. In other words, as the Mefarshim say, or Rechaim says, this means that the Jews are going to even be greater than angels. Beseichachem means in your midst, Hashem is going to be together with you. Mamish like one. V'leisigal nafshi eschem, and my spirit will never reject you. In other words, Hashem makes a deal, so to speak. When you keep mitzvahs, I will never hate you. I will never hate you. I'll never despise you. I will be amongst you. And that's it. We'll have one after another of a brachas.
That the more you do a mitzvah, then Hashem is going to get harder and harder on you, no?
No. That's not what it says here.
The more you do it, the Hashem look for the smallest thing you do wrong and he punishes you, no?
Yeah, that's true. That's not what he's saying here, though. You're right. The truth is, the greater the person becomes, the more is demanded from them. When a first grader goes into second grade, they can't act anymore like a first grade. Now they get harder work. And the third grade gets harder, and in high school gets the other way, goes down. But really it's supposed to get more and more is demanded. But here, again, as we learned at the beginning of B'chukaisai, according to the Rambam, this is all not the reward of the mitzvahs. This is only reward, not reward, this is to allow the person to be easier to be able to fulfill mitzvahs.
So when you know the consequences, then why do you have to get to that level?
You mean why do we sin?
Why do a
mitzvah?
If you're gonna be, it's gonna be that you do a small thing. She's saying we get to the point that you do a small.
Okay, so in other words, I'm gonna, like I said before, why go into high school if high school is harder than eighth grade? Why don't you just stay in eighth grade your whole life? No, high school is harder than eighth grade. Yeah, most of the time. Yeah, hello. So why should somebody want to graduate to go into high school or to college? Let him stay in elementary. It's much easier. It's cheaper too, yeah. Tuition is cheaper. Most of the time, not always. No, one thing. You understand? Why?
I mean, he's spending hours and hours and hours a day davening.
Wow, you're good. Hours and hours and hours. You get the tzaddik award, yeah.
No, but I'm just saying it. And you're spending your time, you're trying to do right things, trying to do the mitzvah, you're trying to help. And then you know that if you make a mistake, you're being caught.
Okay, let's give you a different example. Do you want your kids to get married?
I do.
Okay. Is married life harder or easier than single life?
Harder.
So why bother getting married? Is more demanded from you when you get married than when you're single? And you can tell me the truth. We're married. Yeah? Don't tell the kids. They don't think this way. Kids in high school think, I know my kids used to tell it to me, you guys think you have problems in life. We have problems. We have midterms and finals. Right? You tell your parents, you guys, you have problems? What problems do you have? You have to take tests? You don't need to take tests? Yeah, Machaya, you live a life of Riley, like they used to say. A life of leisure. Okay? But the experienced people, the intelligence experienced people know, married life is much harder than single life. It's even harder than high school. Yeah? So why do we want Nebuch, we love our kids so much, why do we want them to get married? But now they're responsible for everything that they do. You can't go back, mommy help, daddy help. I mean, now you're on your own, right? You blow it, you blow it. Yeah? Why do we want that? No answer?
To be complete.
Granted, it's harder, but the harder something is, the more rewarding it is. Correct? If it's more rewarding and more accomplishing, that's the definition of a human being growing. To grow. You know, you can have a very brilliant 10-year-old, but if they stay at that brilliance at 20, God forbid they're retarded. Correct? I mean, God forbid, that's a retardation. Okay? The Torah says, the more you grow, yes, there's more responsibilities. Yes, Hashem is medaktik b'tzadikim kuchut asayda. Okay, God, yes, God is particular with tzadikim, like the width of a hair. Okay? But it's much more rewarding, it's much more fulfilling, it's much greater accomplishment, and that's what a human being is all about. Hashem didn't make it that we stay 5-year-old our whole life. It might be a good idea to stay 5-year-olds innocent. Okay, I don't know how innocent they are today, but nowadays they're innocent. But why do we grow? It's harder. It's harder. But that's growth. So a person should become closer to Hashem. Yeah, it's higher. It's more difficult. But it's more challenging and it's more rewarding. Hello? What were you saying?
I agree.
Thank you.
The thing is that, you know, okay, I'm going up this ladder, for instance, but the rewards is there, I'm growing and all these things, and I'm doing all these mitzvahs. So I would imagine just that, okay, so there must be some kind of a, what do you call it, scale that, you know, I did all these mitzvahs, so I, like she says, I do one mistake. At least all of these things that I've done should come into play and help.
They do. They do.
They do.
Of course they do. When you want to jump forward, what do you need to do? Take a step back. When you want to pick something up, what do you need to do? You need to bend down. Right? Sometimes, in order to grow, you need to go down. It's called Yirid Tzeirach Aliyah. Sometimes you need, if you want to build a better house than you have, what do you have to do? You have to demolish it. You can't build a better house if the house is there. Sometimes, and this is part of the plan, by the way. And Hashem is very understanding. He knows. You know, sometimes, you know, in educating kids, it's very important for parents to allow their kids to make a mistake, to learn from their mistakes. If a parent will always bail out their kid, I don't mean from jail. If a parent will bail out their kid from every problem that they get into, they're not a proper educator. Because part of the growing process is to make mistakes and to learn and build on the mistakes. So we have to teach him how to learn from the mistakes. Hashem allows us to sin to be able to come to the level of tshuva.
Allows us to sin
to a higher level of tshuva. And it started all the way from day one. Adam Arishan sinned, that he should be able to do tshuva. The Gemara says, you know, I'm not talking about the movie version of David with Bathsheba. You know, everybody knows that story. Okay? The Gemara says, whoever says David HaMelech sinned is making a mistake. David HaMelech didn't do any sins. Okay. On his level, he did something wrong. Okay? The Gemara says, David HaMelech roi la'isi itztala. David HaMelech wasn't fit to commit such a crime. On his level. It says, Ruvain, David HaMelech, it says, go through all the scholars, they weren't fit to do such a crime. So it says, why did Hashem make it happen? To show us and to teach us the path of tshuva is open for everybody. So Hashem made biblical character sin on their level, not the movie level of their sin, because they didn't sin on the movie level of their sin. I never saw the movie, but I heard from all the kids I taught, I heard so much about the movie, it's as if I saw it. But the allowance that Hashem allows a tzaddik to do, or all of us, to do something wrong, is that's the only way we can learn from our mistakes and reach a higher level not to make the mistake again. That's a learning process. Sin is a learning process. Problems are a learning process. Failure is a learning process. Believe it or not, failure is a learning process. Because we can only learn when we fail.
The trick is to look at it.
Huh? What?
The trick is to look at it that way and work on it that way.
That's what the Torah is all about, by the way. Looking at the positive. No, Torah looks at the positive of everything. Through, especially Chassidus. It's not for now, it's late already. Chassidus will go through every negative thing that exists in Torah and show the positive aspect of it. A Jew needs to see everything positive. When Hashem makes a problem, it's positive. When Hashem makes tragedy, it's positive. When Rabbi Kiva saw the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, instead of crying, he laughed. He saw building, he didn't see destruction. Okay.